What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Monday Moguls. I'm Mac Ruzicki.
Para Car.
And we're your hosts today. Coming to you with a new perspective from two guys on the front lines of real estate, commercial real estate, in the west coast of Florida and the Tampa Bay area. So how was this last week, man?
It's been good. I've been making some calls. We're finally getting somewhere with the leasing activity finally. And it's looking bright. I mean, we're having some better conversations from my perspective. I came across a few different people that basically they said that they were looking at they seem just better. Like, I feel like I'm able to qualify the buyers a little bit better, right? So that way we're just having better conversations. But overall, the week was pretty productive, I would say.
Right, and you know, I think we're kind of having a bit of a shift right now with our approach to sellers. It's way more consultative. Mm-hmm. It's way more, what can I do for you? Like, I'm on a mission to help you and help the people in the area, you know. So rather just networking with local business owners and property owners to help them achieve their goals and how we come into that picture. So, and yeah, over time, you know, you're just going to be having those better conversations. So what was the best conversation you had this week with a cold call?
There is this one gentleman. He, when I first called him, he was a little bit busy, so gave him a call back, and he gave me the complete rundown of his properties. It was 11 units in Tampa, and he was a funny guy. You can tell he had like a nice like sense of humor, which was nice. And he went down and he listed each and every single unit, like the unit, it was unit A, let's say 1100, was getting 1100 a month, and he went down every single unit, and I thought that was just funny, because you don't really get that really, like it's either you get like a monthly gross income is what I'm getting, or hey, yeah, they're mostly 2-1s, they're averaging 1300 a month, you know, so. It was kind of like a nice like little surprise, like getting like that.
Right.
Each and individual.
It definitely
unit.
Seems more like a bought in,
yeah.
You know, owner manager. Whereas you get a lot of these owners that are removed from the management, and they're just like, I don't know, man. And
yeah.
It's like 30 grand a year, like
exactly.
You know, so that's kind of interesting that, you know, 11 units in Tampa. I wonder what will that'll lead to. We got to continue to manage that. With our pipe drive accounts and make sure that we're following everything to a T, get into a close. So this week, total number of calls, 306, number of offers made, 2, 1 LOI, 1 contract. Number of new buyers, 1 new buyer. We're really focusing on servicing the pre-existing buyers this week. And then number of new hot leads, we got that 11 unit. So that's good. Interesting market news and current events. So almost 70%, 67.6% of Americans have paid off their mortgage or have at least 50% equity. And that is a statistic from the census. So I think that speaks volumes as to, you know, how things have shifted over the last several decades and like how rapidly people have been able to build equity in their house and you know, refinance their properties. And I think the majority of homeowners out there that have loans on their properties are, you know, below, I think like 50% or something like that is like below 3%, which is just crazy to me. And it just makes me feel like I missed that boat, but
yeah.
Hey, you know, we'll make do. Another interesting statistic, Nashville submarket is leading the nation with new units coming available with over 10,000 units delivering soon. Tampa is at number 16 with 2,563 units coming available in 2023 to 2024. And then number 3, interesting market news and current events, Florida has gained $40 billion in adjusted gross income from pandemic-related moves. Yeah, I heard that they had a surplus on their balance sheet, which most other states do not. And that's interesting. And I think that speaks to the business acumen of what they're doing here in the state.
So where would that surplus go to?
roll over into next year, and they'll use it on another program, whether that's like, you know, redoing the highways, or that's building bridges, or building schools, or, you know, bolstering police force, I don't know, something like that. You can ask DeSantis when you meet up next. So, cool. So, topic of the day, Q&A with Ada. What you got?
Yeah. First topic I wanted to dive a little deeper on were just the different cycles that a transaction broker might go through the different cycles that they go through in commercial real estate, right? So, you go out, you prospect, you can market yourself, you find the deal, you put the buyers together, have them deal on the same terms, and then so on and so forth. So, just kind of like more elaborate on like maybe the deals that we're on, like what cycle are we currently in, and then overall just what the whole cycle is.
So, are you talking about a market cycle, or are you talking about the cycle of a transaction?
Yeah, yes, of a transaction broker.
Okay. Yeah, so transaction broker, basically you're going out there, you have a buyer with a need, you're going out there and, you know, you're finding that need as an acquisitionist, and that's basically where, you know, I came from the last brokerage, and I just apply that to what I'm doing now on a larger scale. And so, you know, from inception, find a buyer, you do your info sheet, then once you understand what they're looking for, then you go out there, you start sending them some on-market properties, you know, you submit some offers on that. If you can't get something on-market, then that's when you shift your focus to sourcing off-market opportunities. You start building some relationships with sellers, and, you know, you see if they would consider selling or listing the property. And then once you've, you know, gained some interest in, you know, dispositions of the property, maybe they're retiring, maybe they're moving out of state, maybe it's a headache property, maybe they're downsizing, whatever the case might be, then, you know, you start building that relationship with them as well. And so once you have a buyer need and a seller need and you pair the two together, now you're the transaction broker, where you are representing the best interests of the transaction itself, and you are equally, you know, working with both sides of the party. So that's how that transaction comes together. And then really it just comes down to communication and how you're handling all of the, you know, things working with the title company, making sure that the buyer is meeting their deadlines, that everyone is doing what they need to do according to the terms laid out in the contract. And that's really, you know, what the transaction broker does. And that's why they're able to do, you know, get both sides a lot of times, because they're facilitating transactions off market when they already have a buyer need that they're just trying to fill, basically. And a lot of times today, I believe we're still in a seller's market. So, you know, seller wants to sell a property, buyers will come. And whether or not that's yours or someone else's, you know, there's that. And there's different types of agency relationships, but transaction brokers, the most widely used, the most common.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's basically the cycle of a transaction, and then it's just getting it to a close and making sure that everyone's happy there afterwards, connecting them with the right vendors to make sure they're set up, whether that's property management, that's maintenance, contractors, accountants, you know, lawyers, things like that. So
quickly learning that takes a little longer than I first thought.
Yeah, it takes a little bit more than 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but it's a journey that counts. So. But the second topic that I wanted to touch on was, I found it interesting because Amazon, they set a mandate in May of 2023 in Seattle that they're having their employees go back to their work sites from, I believe it was from Tuesday to Thursday. So I thought that was a little interesting. Obviously, Amazon being one of the biggest companies in the world, and having their workers go back to their place of work. So maybe that transitioning into some of the other largest cities.
One of the largest employers bringing their, you know, employees back to the office. So, I mean, there's been a big push from a lot of different companies because they're literally just like trying to make sense of this lease that they have on their balance sheet.
Yeah.
And a lot of these companies, you know, are having a hard time getting people to come back to the office, particularly people in tech jobs. Because so much of that can be remote. A lot of sales can be done remote, you know. I mean, real estate sales, like we can work from home, we can work at a Starbucks, we can work at the office. I prefer the office. I think that there's just more camaraderie. You have a question, you can, you know, go knock on somebody's door, right. Things like that. So I think that in the long run, people will return to the office because working from home is just like just too many different distractions, and it's just that's a different headspace that you're in personally. That's my take, and I think that other people will find that in time. But yeah, I mean, not a lot of people like fighting traffic and, you know, getting to the office and then dealing with like politics and then, you know, fighting traffic back home to go see their kids. I mean, they get more time back in their day. Like, I get it. I understand, you know, personal preference, I guess. And if it doesn't reflect the performance, then, you know, so be it. But if you drag out people working from home, I think over time you'll see a decline in performance. But
right.
That's, you know, my take.
Yeah, I think obviously it depends on the individual on what like their mindset is and how they work from home compared to the work site. But I feel like as a whole, the company would definitely see like greater in their sales or whatever the company does like in progress if everyone went back to the office. But yeah, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, Kevin O'Leary and Barbara Corcoran, among a lot of other people, have been very vocal that, you know, the office space probably won't be coming back anytime soon, though. That about 60 to 70% of current office space occupancy is, there's about 60 to 70% occupancy in large market of office spaces, and that's not enough to meet the debt obligations that are coming due here in the next couple of years. So that's going to have ripple effects across the industry, and we'll see how that all shakes out.
Right.
So
next topic that I wanted to touch on also were opportunity zones. I feel like we've been learning a little bit more about that in the past few weeks. Overall, just what are the benefits of opportunity zones? How can individual use they can get rid of their deferred tax if they reinvest it into a QOF, a qualified opportunity fund, and also how, like, what makes obviously the property has to be in an opportunity zone, but does it differ on the type of property? So does every property qualify for that type of benefit?
So you're talking about two things.
You're talking about a two-part question.
Well, yeah, so you're talking about 1031s, and then you're talking about opportunity zones. Mm-hmm. So 1031s is you buy a property, that property appreciates, and when you go to sell it, now your profit, you know, then becomes like your basis, I guess, and then that is moving into another property. So you're just deferring that tax, kicking the can down the road, and you'll pay that tax at a later date. And so if you kick the can down the road long enough and then an opportunity zone comes up, you know, or really we're also talking about DST programs, which is something we're going to get into next, but Delaware Statutory Trust. So if you go to one of these providers, these operators that control these DST programs, very similar to a REIT, you know, you can invest in a public REIT and they pay cash dividends and they have different liquidation events and investors get paid out on that. Mm-hmm. But you're not identifying necessarily one property and you're kind of just along for the ride, whatever the REIT does. And it's different for a DST program. And so some of these DST programs, you know, specialize in these opportunity zones. So when you have a 1031 and you have, say, $1.5 million in deferred tax on another property, you know, rather than paying long-term capital gains on that, you can put that deferred tax of, say, $1.5 million with the gains and everything else from the property into the DST qualified opportunity zone property that they have. And when that's done, when that fund is done, then, you know, you have the deferred tax that you can write off to the amount of time that it's been in the opportunity zone for, and I think it's 10 years. There's been some back and forth since its inception in 2017 as to if it's like on an annual thing, if it's 10% a year, or if it's just the 10 years. I've kind of heard mixed things here in the last week since we've been working on a very similar scenario. So Anyway, but that's a really great way to get a triple tax break, because you don't have to pay the capital gains. The income tax that you'd be making from it is non-taxable, and then you hold it for 10 years, and there you go.
Right.
So, anyway, all that in a nutshell. Again, I'm not like a 1031 specialist. There's people that I go to for things like that, but that's just kind of the rough framework and the way that I think most people should do that if they have the right motivations to, say, retire, get out of the game. They don't want to do the management anymore. 1031, DST, triple tax break, no more management, you're good.
Right.
So, cool. So that kind of gets also into some of the additional notes here. Some things more locally, like the 4X density multiple coming to downtown Sarasota within their opportunity zones. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy. If it's zoned for, say, 50 units an acre, now you can be up to 200 units an acre. So I think we're going to see a lot of, vertical development there in the next 10 years for sure. And that'll be, I think Sarasota is going to look completely different in 10 years. So a lot of money is pouring in there right now. A lot of deals getting done. That's an area where buying and selling, purchase sale agreements are happening quite frequently, but the word is out locally. So, you know, it's not unheard of right now. People are kind of wanting a premium for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so there's also a KW commercial meetup in Sarasota we went to a few days ago. And so that's with Gavin Oberlin. And, you know, he's such a good dude, and he's just like a good-hearted guy. He specializes in industrial, and, you know, that's his niche. He crushes it. He makes a ton of cold calls. He has a few admin that he works with, and, you know, he does stuff all over the state. One of the things I thought was the most interesting is that 70% of his listings are outside of his, you know, local area of Sarasota. 30% are local to Sarasota. And when we were talking to him the other day, he called on a for sale by owner, picked up 8 listings one morning, had signs out on the property 2 days later.
That's nuts.
Like, yeah. That, when I hear stuff like that, I mean, it makes me feel like we're just not making enough calls, you know, so... Anyway, KW Commercial Meetup, it's on the third Thursday of every month in Sarasota. This last week's was at Yard House down there, but it's probably getting moved next month. Hillsborough County Housing Authority Section 8 Landlord Training / Certification. So on the quadplex property that I was able to raise some money for and go do that deal, there's no guarantee that you're getting paid on time. From the tenants that are currently in there on the leases from before. And that's kind of been a struggle, having to call them like 4 or 5 times in order to make sure that they're getting that payment in. Whereas if you have these Section 8 properties, if you turn it into a Section 8 property, tenants get these vouchers, they don't want to lose the vouchers, and, you know, it's more guaranteed income. You got to be careful to use the G word, but... it is more reassuring, regardless of what's going on in the market. You rely on that more. So that's something that I'm looking to do. That's a good program that was recommended to me that I'm probably going to partake in the next couple of weeks or months. And then one of the presentations that happened here in the last week was Proppy. So they are a blockchain title company, and the reason why I think this is so needed and such a powerful new technology is because if you look at the pre-existing title companies, they go through their records, you know, they run chain of title, they do this and that, and like it takes a while to get all of this in. Whereas if you just have it stored on one central title company blockchain, you know, you're getting the surveys, you're getting the previous mortgage docs, you're getting everything that goes on with the title work in one spot, and, you know, it's time stamped, it's it's like irreputable or immutable, so you can't edit it. And, you know, once you go in, you can just pull that information out and you can get a closing done in like maybe half the time. I mean, if you wouldn't have to go back and do a survey because the buyer lost it, you know, that would definitely save time and money. So that's really nice. And they also take care of a portion of the transaction coordination, so everybody gets updated at the same exact time. So that's really nice. a lot of really great features with what they're doing. So big proprietor of what they're doing, and they also take crypto payments. And so, you know, every 3 or 4 years we see a really big run up in the crypto thing, and it's logarithmic, where it basically just adds another zero at the end of it. So, you know, if we're at 25,000 now, I wonder if that's gonna put us in the six-figure range on the next one in 2024. I know a lot of people are calling for it. If that happens, people are gonna probably take a lot of these gains, and they're gonna probably want to put it into real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So this title company, I think, is going to be a big proprietor for that. Talking about crypto, SEC has recently recognized, I want to say maybe like a dozen different cryptos as securities, which is a huge leap in the crypto space, because for the longest time it was just a lot of gray space, and now I think we're finally getting around to some of the clarity. And I think the SEC is actually starting to get some backlash because they have not provided any clarity. And Coinbase has made that very clear in the lawsuit that they're entering into now. So that's interesting to me personally, and I think for some of our listeners and viewers out there. takeaways from this week's reading. So what are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And I'm pretty early in it right now, but so far I'm really enjoying it. He basically likes to go into the overall, like, how powerful the mind is, and like what you focus, and like how you focus that towards the certain goal of just getting rich all in all. He discusses how most people grow up that might have poor parents, that they kind of not knowingly they gear them towards that same mindset. And most people have the mindset of, oh, I have to make money, or like I can't be poor. And he basically goes a little further on shifting that mindset on how I can become wealthy. So like I said, I'm pretty early in it right now, but overall I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read Think and Grow Rich like probably 4 or 5 years ago, so yeah. A lot of that has escaped my memory, but I do remember that being a really good book. And one of the things that a lot of the speakers and self-development people that I've followed had recommended, so it's definitely a good book.
Right.
So I went to school at High Point University, and the school president, Nito Quibain, has like quadrupled the size of the campus by number of buildings, number of students, faculty, community outreach, everything. He's crushing it. And so his name is Nito Quibain, and he wrote a number of books, including How to Be a Great Sales Professional. And so that's what I'm reading right now. I'm almost finished it actually, and a lot of it is framework. It doesn't necessarily go into a ton of the intricacies, but one of the takeaways that I had that directly applied to something that I had just done like several days before I had read it was that if, let's say, you're in the area and you have a couple different prospects and you say, hey, I'm in the area, are you able to meet? What that tells them is that, hey, you're not important enough for me to make a meeting alone just for you. And so that can kind of come off not disrespectful, but also not like you're on a mission to serve their needs. So that was something that was a shift for me, and something that I'm not going to do again in the future. And so that's something to keep in mind, and maybe something our viewers have done or can avoid making that mistake. That pretty much wraps it up. I mean, we got one quote here. That's where progress is measured, performance improves.
Right.
And we have a lot of KPIs that we do on a weekly basis, and kind of helps us keep track of where we are, make sure our pipeline's in check, and things like that. So in this week, I've weighed under 200 pounds for the first time in like 3 months because I track that every single day. So yeah, man, woo. Health and wellness. So all right, well, thank you guys for a great episode, and we'll see you on the next one.
See you guys.